is the Progressive Radio Network. Information for the independent mind.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani on the Progressive Radio Network. And it's another beautiful Thursday morning, and I'm so happy to be here with all of you today. Last week, I was in Italy at Terra Madre, the International Slow Food Conference that takes place every other year. And for the last four of these conferences, I have gone as a slow food chair of Slow Food North Shore. I find it really helpful and empowering and just rejuvenating to go to Italy and surround myself with over 7,000 other delegates from around the world who are also committed to improving our food system and food access to everybody. And what slow food really stands for is good, clean, and fair food. And it also means supporting traditions, supporting indigenous people, supporting indigenous languages, supporting a way of life that we are desperately needing to hold on to because it is quickly losing. Our Western diet, the fast food nation, is, you know, expanding around the world, and slow food is a pushback against fast food. And it was just wonderful to be there. There were many, many conferences going on, and it's the kind of information that we really need to get out to the public. It makes me furious when I listen to the presidential debate and not one mention of our food system is in there. No question about our food system. No questions about climate change. These are issues that everybody is grappling with. These are issues that are going to affect everybody's daily life. And for it to not be in the forefront of the conversations just is unbelievable. I don't know how that is. So it's just really, really important that we all take up this fight and advocate for a healthy food system. And what that means is real, whole food, not processed food. It doesn't mean that it has to take a long time to prepare your meals, because I am a mother as well, and I know what it's like to get dinner on the table, and you need to do that pretty rapidly. And you can do that, and a lot of it is planning and figuring out how to do it, but it's easy. I am a chef, and yet I never went to culinary school. I'm self-taught. And so if I can do it, anybody can do it. And it's just when you start cooking, one thing leads to the next, and you just find it becomes a creative way of sharing your love and your creativity with the people around you. And the conversations that happen around the table are essential and so important. While I was at the slow food conference called Terra Madre, I participated in many workshops, workshops that were looking at, one of the ones that I really loved was looking at the relationship with the earth through contemporary art. And that's something that is a little out on the fringe, but it's really just wonderful to see that these issues that I find so disturbing, land grabbing, multinational corporations taking over our food system, controlling seeds, denying climate change, these are issues that are universal, that everybody is dealing with. And when artists use their medium as a way of expressing and drawing more attention to it, it's really fascinating and wonderful. And artist Amar Kanwar from New Delhi did a piece called The Sovereign Forest, and we talked about that, and one part was a film screening of a portion of that piece called Scene of Crime. And he was just talking about gathering evidence. It might not be evidence that stands up in court, but it's evidence, nevertheless, of the trees being knocked down, of the animals being killed, of people being killed, of what happens when land is taken away from the people and the earth and given over to multinational corporations to, whether they're going to plant palm trees or graze animals or whatever they decide to do with it, it's not in the best interest of the people. And it's just infuriating, and it was just very moving to be a part of that discussion and to be in the room watching this film. It was just really, really moving. And then following that, there was a wonderful tasting by David Scabin, who is a award-winning chef. He has a restaurant in Manhattan, and he has a restaurant at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Italy. And he did a tasting of risottos, and he used heirloom varieties of risotto that are grown really high up in the mountains. And each one was prepared differently. One had some salmon in it with cucumbers and mango and yogurt, and it was really so many different flavors. It was really interesting. And then a red pepper risotto. But the last one, he used insects. And I must admit, I did not try it, but some people did, and they said it was very good. As someone that doesn't eat animals, I just didn't want to eat that one. But insects are a good source of protein, and they are going to be entering more and more menus as chefs start experimenting with this. And like you said, that's not an item that is normally on his menu, but in an attempt to think about food for the future, he prepared this risotto with insects, and people really enjoyed it. In the past, I have interviewed Megan Miller, who has Biddy Foods, and she produces cricket flour and bakes cookies. And that was a way she felt was a safe way of introducing insects into the American market. And that company is really taking off. So you will be seeing more and more insects entering more and more menus. So keep an eye out for that. But also there was a discussion. Marion Nestle was there, and she was talking about you know, we are millions and how we can stand up against the multinational corporations. They have all the money, but we have the numbers. And that's what I was talking about, spreading this message so we can get more and more people who are willing to take on the fight and stand up for what they know is right and for our food system. There was also people there from the Native American First Nation tribe and or collective, and they were talking about the North Dakota pipeline and how we really need to push back against these pipelines and stand in solidarity with the First Nations. And it was incredible to listen to her talk, and I've written about that over the last couple of weeks as this pipeline fight is continuing on. And just, you know, stay aware of this issue. It's really important. We need to stop the expansion of all these pipelines and really make the commitment that we committed to during the Paris talks towards renewable energy. And so the expansion of these pipelines, which always leak, always burst, always pollute the surrounding water and land, have to stop, and we really need to invest in wind and solar and find new ways, and we need to invest money in innovation so that we can find other sources of energy and stop this expansion of pipelines. Also, one very interesting discussion, it was talking about the true cost of food the true cost of cheap food. And very often, you know, people complain, I hear it all the time, that organic food is expensive. And part of the reason, organic food's not really expensive. If you grow your own food, you know how much work it is, and it is a value that is worth paying for. But when you compare it to the cheap food that is alongside it, that cheap food is subsidized by the government. That cheap food gets to pollute our land and water with glyphosate and all these pesticides and herbicides that run off into our water, pollute the land, pollute the rivers, and they do not have to pay for any of the cleanup. That gets pushed onto the taxpayer. If these companies had to pay to clean up their messes, not to mention health care, the cost of health care in this country is enormous, and the amount of chronic diseases that are connected to diet is huge. And if they had to pay for the medical costs for the diseases they are causing, can you imagine how much cheap food would cost? It would be way more expensive than organic food. So, you know, your choice is to either pay up front for organic food and stay away from the doctors, or, you know, buy that cheap food and find yourself sick down the road. So I vote for investing in organic food. Not only is it better for you and your family, but then you're also supporting people that are really making a commitment to do the right thing, and that is so important. Lots of things going on in and around the city, and I do want to share those with you. And, of course, I have a guest today. My guest will be Janine Mori, and I want to invite her on in just a little bit. So let me just tell you a few things going on. There's so many events going on this time of year that it's just, you know, it would take up the whole show. So check out events on my website. I list them all. I really put a lot of time into gathering events that are in the New York area, but also big events that are in other places. I will advertise those too. So, like, there's a the New York Vegan Festival is now going to L.A., and that's going to be happening next month. So I don't only list events that are going on in New York. Growing Power is having their conference coming up, and that, you know, I'll tell you about that as well. So I do want to mention a couple, though. Tonight is a fundraiser for Urban Aqua Farms, and I interviewed just a couple of weeks ago people from that farm, and it is a fundraiser for the aqua farm that's right in Brooklyn, and Yemi Amu from Oko Farms, and it's a fundraiser tonight at the Cabbage Hill Farm, and that is in Brooklyn. It's $100. It's a fundraiser, but it's a great organization. The Northeast Brooklyn Housing Development Corp is funding it. So check that out. Tomorrow is the Yale Food System Symposium. This is the fourth annual one, and the theme this year is Feeding a Growing World, Perspectives in 2016. That's an all-day event, so there's still tickets available for that. Also, September 30th, tomorrow, is the Urban Agricultural and Next Farm Bill Symposium. That's at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., and you can register. There's a link on my website for that as well. October 1st is the second annual New York City Craft Coffee Festival, and that is in Brooklyn. And also, it's the 13th annual Harvest Fest up at Stone Barn Center. I think individual tickets are sold out, but you still can, if you are a group, you still can get some tickets. And my experience is if you go there, you usually can get in anyway. October 5th, Hunter College is having their food policy for breakfast, and the topic is food as medicine, and they have a great panelist, group of panelists lined up, so including Robert Graham and Karen Pearl, who have both been guests on my show. And these food policy for breakfast events at Hunter College are really great. They're free, and they're just an hour and a half, and they get right to the point, and they're just a great source of networking as well. So if you're in the city, I recommend checking that out. Sunday, October 9th, up in Hudson, There is another fundraiser to support Little Debs and Letterbox Farm. Little Debs is a new local restaurant that is started by two artists. And this is a fundraiser to help get them going, and also Letterbox Farm, which is an organic farm up in that area. And there will be cocktails and live music in the garden, and then a full dinner, multi-course dinner under the tent. And that's in Hudson, so that should be fun. It's Columbus Day weekend, so there's no work on Monday, so for many of us. So check that out. Also, October 15th, North Shore Land Alliance is having a walk in the woods. That is a wonderful thing. October 14th is the Farm to School Conference going on in Maine. And that is an all-day event. What else do I want? I want to share with you that October 23rd, I am hosting a yoga retreat and farm-to-table cooking class here at the IE Green Homestead. Lorelei Henry is the yoga teacher that will be featured at this retreat. She's been teaching for over 20 years. She's a wonderful yoga teacher. And then I will be leading a gluten-free vegan cooking class. So check that out. Also, there is the Northeast Sustainable Agricultural Working Group is having their annual It Takes a Region conference on November 10th through the 12th. This is a wonderful opportunity for the Northeast food hub people to get together and collaborate and innovate solutions for our food system. So that's taking place in Hartford, Connecticut, at the Hartford Hilton. So check that out. There's a variety of different different costs. And up until tomorrow, there's actually discount tickets available and scholarship tickets available. So check that out. November 12th is Growing the Good Food Movement, 13th Annual Change Food Fest. That used to be known as TEDx Manhattan, and now they're calling it Change Food Fest. Really great event. She has the organizer has a great lineup of speakers and panelists. It's an all-day event from 9 to 7, so check that out. There's still tickets available. And then November 16th to 20th is Will Allen's Growing Powers International Urban and Small Farm Conference. And that's taking place in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And Will Allen is a powerhouse and really teaching so many people about urban agriculture, and he's just great. So check out that that event as well. So I want to share with you a recipe really quickly before I invite Janine Mori on. This is a stuffed squash with tofu and summer vegetables. And I use a flying saucer squash, which is very much like a butternut, like an acorn squash. But any squash that you can cut in half and hollow out the inside will work out just fine for this recipe. And you want to cut the squash in half, hollow out the seeds, and you're going to bake that in a 375 degree oven face down, brush it with some olive oil, and let that cook. And depending on the size of the squash, depends on how long it will take, but you want to be able to pierce it with a fork, and then you know it's ready. So you need three squashes, depending on the size, I guess. It might be two, and it could be four. I use three flying saucer squashes, one onion sliced into slivers, one baby Japanese eggplant diced, one 15-ounce package of extra firm tofu, one tablespoon ginger grated, two tablespoons garlic minced, two carrots diced, 10 large white mushrooms sliced. You can also use shiitake or portobellos. Three long cooking peppers diced, and you can use bell peppers as well. The long peppers is what I was growing in my garden, so I use those. Two cups chopped packed greens, and I just took any greens I had in the garden. So I had chard, kale, Mizuna greens, and I really I chopped them up. I took out the stems, and then I really packed it down. So two packed cups. 1.5 cups of broccoli florets, 2 cups of assorted cherry tomatoes, olive oil, salt and pepper, a quarter cup of Marsala wine, 2 tablespoons tamari, 1 teaspoon thyme, 1/2 teaspoon rosemary, and 1/4 teaspoon red pepper flakes. And then fresh parsley I added as well, and saved some for garnishing as well. So like I said, I baked the squash first, and the flying saucer squash that I used took about 30 minutes in the oven. While that's cooking, you can cut the tofu lengthwise into 3 pieces and lay it out on a dish towel and cover it with another dish towel and press down lightly to absorb the water. Whenever I'm sauteing tofu, that's what I like to do with it. I cut it into thirds and I press it down between a towel to remove most of the water. And then I cut it up into little cubes. In a wok, I sautéed the tofu in some olive oil for about 5 minutes without turning it. You really want to allow the tofu to get a golden brown edge before you turn it. You can shake the pan a little bit to help keep it from sticking, but you don't really want to start stirring it yet, because that breaks the tofu up and you don't want it to crumble. Then I added the onions, the ginger, and the garlic, and sautéed that for about 5 more minutes until the onions were translucent. Then I added the carrots, the eggplant, the thyme, rosemary, and red pepper flakes, and continued cooking that for a few more minutes. I added the peppers, the mushrooms, and the greens, and continued cooking until they were soft. Then I added the broccoli and the tomatoes, and I let the tomatoes cook down a little bit until the broccoli was soft. I added the tamari and the Marsala wine, along with some salt and pepper for taste, and allowed all the flavors to come together. Taste the sauce then, see if you want to add a little bit more tamari or salt. Either one will give saltiness. It's really a personal choice, which you would like. And then I took that mixture and I stuffed it into the squash. I covered it and I baked it for about 15 more minutes, allowing the flavors and the sauce from the vegetables to infuse the squash. And then I garnished it with some fresh parsley and decorated the plate with some oranges and flowers. And it was just a beautiful presentation, and it was delicious. So believe it or not, it comes together very quickly. And I would love to know how you enjoyed it, and any feedback. So you can always get me at bhavani@ieatgreen.com. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Janine Mori. She is a longevity specialist, an expert in helping people realize what they can do based on principles of aging healthfully. So she's a longevity expert, and she started a company called Panoramic Living. And Panoramic Living provides comprehensive view of life and helps you understand and implement evidence-based principles of healthy, happy aging. And her experience spans over 20 years working in different programs, both with individuals, employees, companies, and customers. And as a consultant, she's also, does motivational speaking. And she's a specialist also in the Blue Zone diet. She's a Blue Zone certified coach, and we'll talk a little bit more about what the Blue Zone diet is. So, Janine, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Hi, Bhavani. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me on today. I was so excited to hear about your time in Terra Madre. I can't wait to hear more.
Oh, it was just wonderful. I had to stop myself so that I had time for you and the recipe and everything else, but I could have talked the whole hour just about Terra Madre.
Well, I'm hoping to hear more offline, so I'm excited about that.
Good. So I just wanted to start with asking you to share with us, your career and how, you started working in the cable industry with Cablevision. How did that lead you into Panoramic Living, working with the elderly? And, it's just an interesting move. So how did that happen?
So, yeah, I actually grew up professionally in the cable industry, and I almost spent close to 15 years there. And I'm truly grateful for my time there. But what's interesting now is when I look back on my life story and how it's unfolding, I realized that no matter what department I was in at Cablevision, whether it was human resources, whether it was customer service, whether it was marketing, or no matter what my title was, that everything I did revolved around how do I improve the experience, and whether that experience was for employees, customers, or business partners. So what happened is I woke up one morning and I realized that, okay, I'm not supposed to be in technology anymore. I'm supposed to really work on the bigger picture, the life picture. And call it what you will, you know, I sometimes say maybe it's God's whisper, that I needed to work with seniors to find out more about life and the experiences of life. And so when I woke up and I told my kids and my husband, hey, guess what, I'm going to quit my job today, they were like, what? You know, are you out of your mind? You have a great job. You have good benefits, a pension. My kids were beginning their college years, and I said, I'm supposed to do this. And my son, I'll never forget it, he said to me, Mom, seriously, can you just go out and buy a sports car and get over this midlife crisis? So I didn't buy the sports car, and I didn't buy a new car, and I started working in the world of seniors in the assisted living industry. And so it kind of was just this gut plunge into saying, I need to do something different, and this is not where my energy and my strengths are supposed to be within technology and the cable industry. So off I went to assisted living.
Uh-huh. Now, when I think of assisted living, I don't usually think of assisted living facilities as a place that really promotes healthy lifestyle. Can you shed a little light on that? What did you work at some special assisted living places that really did?
So you hear so
many stories about the horrendous experience for so many people at those places.
Yeah, there is the good, the bad, and the ugly. And but what attracted me to the senior or the assisted living industry was that the communities, you know, their beginnings and their origination was all focused on the importance of being within community and being connected. And connection is truly an important part of longevity, and I would say it's the key part of longevity, that if you don't have your relationships with your community, your family, your faith, your friends, you're going to have some true struggles throughout your life. So I wanted to learn more about what was this community living, how was it supporting lifestyle management. And I went into the world, and I started at a company called The Arbors, and then made my way to the Bristol Assisted Living. And while I was there, actually, I was the regional director of business development. And my time, just like in the cable world, focused on, okay, look, it's all about the experience. So even though I'm in business development, which is a part of the marketing function, how do I improve the experience of the residents that it will in turn help marketing? So my focus was all around, you know, improving the experience of the residents through continuing education programs that we partnered with Hofstra and Pace Universities to bring them live feeds of professors from those universities into the community so they can continue their education. I worked on a volunteer program. I worked very closely with the vice president of food services to try to make a difference in the menus, which this is a funny story. When we launched the what's called the Bristol Better You, which is a continuing education program with Hofstra and Pace, our first speaker was a physician who was highlighting the need for more whole foods in the diet, and she was focusing on the importance of blueberries and how blueberries are antioxidant. It's really the brain food. And so what was funny is the next morning the vice president of food services came up to me and he said, Janine, you got to stop this. And I said, stop what? He goes, we have a massive run on blueberries in the dining room. So I was like, yes, it's working. So, I mean, assisted living has come a long way from when it began in the early 1970s to where it is now. And because it's such a competitive environment, they're really focusing on a lot on how do we improve the lifestyles for the residents and the communities. But what really kind of woke me up to, I need to shift from out of here is, as you know, and you mentioned it earlier in the program, is, oh my God, you know, what is the cost of healthcare? And what are our last years on Earth like here in America? And unfortunately, 4 to 10 years of our life is spent in what's called this, what I call the disability zone, which you're plagued by disease and illnesses that cause you to need care. And perhaps it's care in a community or care at home. But what's scary is that, you know, our life expectancy is on this uphill trend, and it's been. But the concern now is that because of the rates of disease and illness in the baby boomer and Gen X populations, that the trend might be reversing, and we might not see.
So it is. I've heard that, you know, babies born today have a shorter life expectancy than their parents. You know, it's definitely turned.
So, I mean, and as you know, I mean, that we still, our number one killer is cardiovascular disease. We've got 70% of our population overweight, 1/3 of them are obese. We've got 29 million people who are diabetic, and 5.3 million people and more are suffering from Alzheimer's. And so what was upsetting to me as I'm in this community is that, okay, you know, we've got all these issues that are causing us havoc in the later years of our lives, but our cure, you know, our solution, what has it been? It's been prescription medication, right? So moving into these communities, it's alarming. You'd see the seniors, you know, unpacking, you know, here they are, you know, their new life in the community. And they weren't just coming with like one or two pill bottles. No, they're moving in with like literally suitcases of medication. Mm. And that was like eye-opening to me to say, oh my gosh, like what are we doing that we're relying on medicine instead of really taking control of our own longevity?
You know, and what can we do differently? Focusing on people when they're already late in life and already on medicine is a little late, don't you think? We need to wake people up.
And that's what happened. As I said, oh my God, it was like a huge awakening for me. I was like, you know, I don't want to see myself and my family go down this path. You know, there's people who are thriving well into their 90s and their 100s. You hear about their stories every day, and it's all good, you know. But it's not when you see the numbers, the sheer numbers of what's happening to the, you know, in our elderly population. So, the meds got me kind of crazy, and I was actually in a session with a physician, and I was sitting with probably about 50, 85-plus-year-old adults living in a community, and this physician was like, the only reason why you're all here today is because of Lipitor. And that kind of like just was like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that just came out of his mouth. You know, and the conversation then continued about medicines and what they should be taking and nothing about preventative medicine, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I get what you're saying about, you know, maybe it's too late at that point, but it's never too late because, you know, it might not be, you know, 10 more years, but it might be, you know, another great day, you know? So, so that kind of really got me charged up as, you know, our economy of healthcare is just getting out of control and, pharmaceuticals. You can't leave, you know, put on TV without seeing, you know, 10 pharmaceutical commercials. It's insane. So,
you know, and I've talked to many medical students, and you know, I ask them how much nutrition education do you get in medical school, and most of them say none. Mm-hmm. You know, or maybe one day. You know, it's just amazing. And later today, after our show, I'll be heading out to Southampton Hospital because Dr. Van Arsdale there, who's in charge of the residency program out at Southampton Hospital, he is unlike many doctors. He actually knows how important nutrition is, and he expects all of his residents to learn about nutrition. And so, I do this every year for him. I go out there, and they watch the movie Food, Inc., and then I do a cooking demonstration and talk about our food system and show them how easy it is to cook good food. And, you know, so they are getting a little bit of nutrition education, but it's rare. Most medical programs don't have that. And
there's starting to be more of a movement. You're seeing it more pop up, which is great. And I think it's more out in the media and in social media that
medical universities and institutions of learning are starting to realize that we need to put a little bit more on nutrition because, you know, even when you go to your just general practitioner, how much are they really spending time with you talking about your diet? You know, right. Most primary care physicians are just, you know, I've got 5 minutes to talk to you, and I don't have that time. So, okay, right. Your blood pressure's up. Here's your script. You know, mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's unfortunately how our life has been. So, yeah, so I just said, okay, now I know what's going on. I've learned now, and I've seen it firsthand experience of what's really happening to the lives of seniors in America. And I said, okay, this is not working. So I need to take charge of it, not only, you know, for the bigger picture, but I need to take charge of it personally and for my family and start there first, you know. So mm-hmm.
So that's what led you to launch Panoramic Living?
That's what led me to. And so I became, as you mentioned, I'm a Blue Zone coach. And
what is
when
that?
When I say to people, what the heck is a Blue Zone coach, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, I know what it is, but, for my listeners, yeah. I would like you to explain it a little bit.
So I became interested in the Blue Zones. My husband had actually returned from a conference where the guest speaker was Dan Buettner. And Dan Buettner is an explorer for National Geographic who led a team on an investigation of the regions in the world that are hot spots of longevity. And so they deemed these hot spots Blue Zones. And there's no reason why they chose the color blue because, you know, most people when they hear it say, why isn't it the green zones, right? But it's really they came up with the Blue Zones because the researchers were circling on the map with a blue pen. And that's how it became the Blue Zones. But these Blue Zones, they are places where people are living up to 8 to 10 years longer than Americans. They have the highest proportion of centenarians globally. And what's the kicker is they're doing it with significantly lower rates of disease and illness. So when my husband came home, you know, from this conference and he threw Dan's book on the table, The Blue Zones, he said, you're going to want to read this. And I said, okay. So I dove right into it. And I was ridiculously excited. And so the hot spots, so the Blue Zones are a high region in Sardinia called Oleostra, Okinawa, Japan, Loma Linda, California, the Nicoya Peninsula in Costa Rica, and a small Greek island off the coast of Turkey called Ikaria. So those five regions have really, you know, commonalities amongst them of why people are living longer, but not just longer. As the Blue Zones say, they're living much better. And mm-hmm. they're not spending their lives in this disability zone. So I became this Blue Zone coach by heading out to meet Dan at a training a year and a half ago, I guess. And we dove into all of the regions and, you know, why, you know, what are those commonalities? You know, what are their, you know, what they call their secrets? So, that's how I became a Blue Coach.
Will you share some of those secrets with us? And I'd like to do that, but first I want to take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, I look forward to hearing what those secrets are. So everyone, don't go anywhere. Talking with Janine Mori from Panoramic Living, and you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green. Be right back.
Listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border, down Mexico.
I'm Johnny Mueller, host of The Expat Files, living in Latin America. Heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a show where you'll learn how to work, play, do business, or retire and live the life of Riley. Yes, an amazing number of first world people like you are jumping off the stateside treadmill and voting with their feet. And surprise, surprise, they're finding there really is an American dream. But it's not in Seattle, Milwaukee, or Cleveland anymore. It's down here in Latin America. So be sure to tune in to The Expat Files to find out how you can live the good life on a measly Social Security check.
I'm Eric Davis, and I want to invite you to join me for Expanding Mind, a show that features conversations about the cultures of consciousness, magic, meditation, neuroscience, religion, technology, psychedelics, weird media. Expanding Mind is devoted to changing your perspective without insulting your intelligence. Tune into the Progressive Radio Network every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And check out the archive page for Expanding Mind on PRN.FM. And remember, keep your minds open.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest is Janine Mori from Panoramic Living. Janine, you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. So right before the break, you were about to tell us some of the secrets of the Blue Zone diet. Can you share those with us?
Sure. So first off, you know, I love the stories of people with secrets of longevity, especially the ones that I've heard of the last couple of years here in the States. You know, there are people who say like, oh, my secret is Oscar Mayer Wieners, or right, it's Miller High Life, or there's this 104-year-old woman who claims it's bacon. So I love when I hear that and people say to me, what's the real secrets, you know? So the National Geographic team, they actually came up with 9 commonalities amongst these regions. And, you know, they do focus primarily on eating wisely, and eating wisely with a plant-based diet, locally sourced, often in their backyards, limited processed packaged food. The other commonalities outside of diet include, you know, things like your tight, mentioned earlier, your tight relationships with your family and community. You know, how do you move physically throughout your day? Like, you need to move naturally. And then how do you have the purpose to wake, you know, your reason for waking up every morning? And of course, how do you manage your stress throughout your life? But diet is a critical piece. And as you know, Dan likes to say, Dan Buhner, he says, you know, the way you get to talking to people is always first about, you know, let's talk about your diet, you know, because that's the way that you can, like, kind of get them excited about changes in their life, and then all these other things happen. You know, you start, and you do see, like, once you're starting to eat healthier, it's like, all of a sudden you feel better, and maybe you're able to exercise a little more. You know, you're managing your stress better, you know, all these things. So, but the diet is really the foundation of longevity in the Blue Zones.
Mm-hmm. And you said it's mostly plant-based?
Mostly plant-based.
Now, were there other things within that? Like, I've heard, you know, walnuts, you know, certain nuts are really great. Avocado, pomegranate, you know, those are things that come to my mind.
Stood out? The diet, you know, their daily meals will have core ingredients of whole grains, vegetables, fruits, fiber, yes, lots of beans, right? And protein, lots of nuts, but extremely minimal meat and fish. So meat is really just served as a celebratory food. It might be like once a month. It might be to celebrate a wedding. And when they have it, you know, their portion size is extremely small. It's, you know, no larger than the palm of, like, your hand. But what's also important is, you know, in Okinawa, they have this phrase that's called harahachibu, which is, you know, they say it before each meal, and it's a reminder to eat only 80%, only until your stomach is full 80%, okay, because it takes like a good 20 minutes for your stomach to send the messages to your brain that you're full. So it's not just about what you eat, but how you eat. It's also who you eat with, you know, the importance of eating with family, the importance of tuning off, you know, and here, you know, I get extremely crazy when I might be out at a restaurant and you turn around, you see a lovely family out to dinner, and all of them are sitting with their, you know, iPhones, their devices. Yeah.
Right.
Right. And it's like, what the heck? And so they're eating, and are they really even enjoying what they're eating? Do they really know what they're eating? You know, and it's a lot around not just what you're eating, but the experience of eating. And then the beverages, you know, what are the choices of beverages? Well, water is number one choice, followed a lot by herbal teas. And they do drink wine in moderation. Actually, the Sardinians, they'll say, you know, their secret is a wine called Cannonau wine, which apparently has three times the amount of antioxidants as other red wines. And when I'm out talking to people, they say, can we get that here? I'm like, yeah, yeah, your local wine store, you know, liquor store has it. You can buy it. I said, I stock up on it. You know, it's more of like a drier, heavier wine. But the diet of the whole foods, you know, not processed, not packaged. They're really, you know, organically growing things locally. I was fortunate enough actually to take an immersion trip to Ikaria, Greece with the Blue Zone team, and it was just you talk about awakenings. This was like I went to a different world, you know. It's like a totally different world than what I'm used to here in suburbia Long Island. So to visit, you know, the farm where we picked our vegetables, just like you're doing on your October 23rd event, you know, to be able to say, okay, you know, here I am, I'm at the farm, we're picking what we're going to make, now we're going into the kitchen, we're making it together, and now we're eating it together. And how different that feels from the experience of how we as a, you know, as a community, as a nation, eat here in the States. And, you know, I'm the biggest culprit of having just the typical American diet. You know, a couple of years ago when I was working in the assisted living world, a lot of my time was spent on the road because the Bristol had communities throughout New Jersey and Westchester and Long Island. And most of my days, I don't even remember what I ate, and most of it was eating in a car.
Shoveling food in.
I think 90% of American breakfasts are eaten in a car.
Yeah.
Ridiculous statistic like that.
So that, you know, for me, like from a personal level, you know, I started to make some big changes in how I was shifting, you know, my diet to,
you know, that was one of the conversations when we were at Slow Food, when I, that workshop I talked about the true cost analysis of cheap food. And this one gentleman was talking about, you know, durum flour and how, you know, when you're looking at pasta, you want to know that it's made with 100% durum flour. And Italy used to be, you know, the biggest producer of durum wheat. And now, and durum wheat doesn't grow up in Turin area. It's too cold. It grows more like in Rome and southern Italy. And yet, the biggest producer is Canada, where it's up north in cold weather. And they're like, how are they doing it? Well, it turns out because of Roundup. Glyphosate allows them, you know, makes it possible to grow it in a colder climate. And so, so you know, you somebody might say 100% durum wheat, but you want to know where it's coming from.
Where it's coming
from,
right?
That's the whole slow food thing. And in Italy, glyphosate and Roundup, it's illegal. Okay, you can't use it there. So even if you're not buying organic, but it's coming from Italy, you know the quality because the government supports healthy eating, supports that quality, you know? So it's a whole different world over there.
That reminds me of a story when I was in Ikaria, our tour guide. She had said, you know, she was traveling to the States when her kids were in their early teens, like 12, 13, and they went to the grocery store. And it was the middle of January, and there were these amazing strawberries, right? And her son turned to her and said, "Mom, how's this possible? How are they having strawberries now?" You know, so yeah, it's crazy. You have to be thinking of where is your food coming from, you know. So
And if you really stop to think about a strawberry, I mean, I shared this story before. You know, I work with kids, and I will have them do a research paper, you know, while they're doing my cooking class that they have, you know, they have an opportunity to do some research and, you know, focus on something they're interested in. So this one person did it on Burger King milkshakes, like a strawberry mm-hmm. milkshake from Burger King. Has no strawberries and no milk, you know? And that tastes like strawberries to people. I mean, people are so used to, you know, flavors that are created in the laboratory, not even mm-hmm. in nature or in a kitchen. I mean, if you taste a strawberry out of season, it's, you know, it's wet and it's tart and it looks like a strawberry, but there's not a resemblance even of the real strawberry flavor. And, you know, so most of our foods, they're artificially flavoring it so that it will taste like a strawberry because they're not using real strawberries. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think about, like, I grew up during the 70s, and, you know, my life as a kid revolved around Saturday morning cartoons. And, like, we grew up with advertisements pushing, like, the breakfast cereals and the snacks and everything. And it's like, I mean, I think, like, my favorite food at that point was probably Lucky Charms. You know, yeah. and thinking, like, you know, the flavors of those marshmallows, right? Like, so, I mean, I think we totally don't realize what the true flavors of food, natural food, is. And once you taste the difference, I have a place up in New Hampshire, and we have blueberries at our home. And, you know, when you're picking it off the bush and you're tasting that blueberry right there, just as the birds and the bears are tasting it, oh, my gosh, so much better than what you're getting in the food store.
Oh, yeah.
So,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So what other changes have you made personally? I guess you've given up Lucky Charms.
So, yeah, I gave up Lucky Charms. I actually was, I was a Coke addict. I was a Diet Coke addict, and I gave that up. And so in the last 2 years, I've actually lost 20 pounds by just eating wisely, like just implementing more of a plant food, you know, plant-based whole food diet into my day. And, you know, what I found is that it's just like anything that you bring to the table and the physical table is that now I'm starting to see my family members starting to adapt these practices as well. And it's a difficult challenge because I grew up in a family which I had a grandfather and an uncle who were butchers, and so life revolved around meat. So now when our table doesn't have any meat, you know, it's exciting. It's good. And so besides, you know, the diet, I've implemented mindfulness practice into my daily routine. Every morning I meditate for 5 minutes and I see the difference. I try to get out and walk, you know, for at least 4 or 5 miles every day. When I talk about purpose, you know, I'm fortunate that I, you know, and I hate to say discover my purpose because I believe that we all have these skills and talents that we're born with. So it's not like you're looking for your purpose, as my friend Linda Lombardo, who's a purpose coach, she'll say, it's not like looking for the Holy Grail. It's there and it's always been you. And for me, you know, my purpose is always bringing joy to other people. Well, now I say my purpose is bringing joy through what I call a rush of panoramic living. So all these things, you know, and it's diet is a foundation, but all of these things have now really had an impact in my life and the way I feel every day. So,
mm-hmm. And the way I interact. Tell us a little bit more about panoramic living and what kind of programs you have coming up.
So panoramic living, I mean, what I did was, you know, after doing my study with the Blue Zones and then researching a lot of other different research projects going around longevity, is I created panoramic living. It has 5 frames of focus, which are, you know, getting back to our roots, eating more from the earth, mindfulness, your connection with your community, your family, your purpose in life, and what I call walking wisdom, is how the importance of walking. And so what I've done is I've taken those principles and I create events and programs throughout the year to bring some awareness to the public about the importance of these principles and how it can make a difference in their lives as it made a difference in my life. I also do some corporate wellness programs. I speak with, as you said, I'm a motivational speaker at community events, and I also work within adult living communities
on creating lifestyle education programs so I can try to make a difference from where I started, you know, and really try to inspire change within those communities to make every day better. So what I have coming up on October 22nd, Saturday, at Caleb Smith Park on Long Island, I have a workshop on Shinrin Yoku. Shinrin Yoku is actually a Japanese therapy. It's translated as forest bathing or forest medicine.
Can you spell that?
Sure. It's S-H-I-N-R-I-N, Shinrin Yoku, Y-O-K-U.
Uh-huh.
So Shinrin Yoku started in the 1980s in Japan when they realized that industrialization was taking them less and less out of the forest. And they realized that the nutrients of the forest people were not getting. So they started to do more research, bringing people back into the forest. They started to see how, you know, this time in the forest, which is kind of, you know, a session that blends spending time in the forest with mindfulness. And that time in the forest was lowering levels of the stress hormone cortisol, it was lowering blood pressure, and it was even increasing, you know, the cancer-fighting cells. So this therapy has been internationalized now, and it's, I guess, here in the States, started in California, as a lot of things do, and make its way to the East Coast. And so I have a certified forest therapy guide, Bibi Calderero, who's from Brooklyn. She's an artist by trade. She will be leading us in a three-hour workshop on the 22nd. So I'm excited about that.
Uh-huh.
And also working on a one-day experiential lifestyle medicine training for healthcare professionals that's going to be offered in early 2017. And we're working on our flagship event that we started last May, which is called Panorama. We had Panorama 16 in May at the Martha Clara Vineyards, and we're working on our event for the spring of 2017.
Wonderful, wonderful. So if you send me information about the October 22nd event plus any others that you have, I will share them with my networks and through my newsletter.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Because that one sounds very interesting. I think, you know, time in nature is essential, and it's something that, you know, kids nowadays are growing up with electronic devices. I mean, you know, babies are being given iPads to play games on, and it's just unbelievable. I've heard stories of, you know, putting kids out into the backyard to play, and they don't know what to do.
Yeah,
I mean, they literally look around. They've never picked up, you know, they've never played in the dirt. They don't play with rocks. They don't know what to do. It's just, it's scary. I mean, you think about it, you know, that, you know, their source of entertainment are these games. So, you know, being in nature is essential. And as you said, it goes along with mindfulness and meditation. And, you know, I was just reading something about meditation, you know, as a way to also control your weight. I mean, when you put your mind to something and you center yourself, it's amazing. We just don't realize how much power we have within ourselves that we just don't utilize. So the work you're doing is great, Janine.
Thank you.
Thank you
As
so much.
As is yours. You're amazing. You're an inspiration to me. I love, you know, the time I get to spend with you and chatting with you on what's going on and in the world. You bring it to people. Thank you.
Thank you. And everyone out there, thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful, and I'll be with you again next Thursday. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you all again next week. Bye for now.
This is PRN.FM, the number one station for progressive minds.
Hi, everybody. I am Karen Hartglass.